Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Metz.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and over the next 30 minutes, I'll bring you the latest headlines from South Africa and around the globe. Whether you're tuning in live or catching the podcast later, please stay with us for in-depth conversation with leading business minds, political influencers, and key newsmakers. It is everything you need to stay informed. It's quick, sharp, and straight to the point. It's Thursday, the 7th of November, and coming up on the program, the economic fallout as the Mozambique-Lebombo border is closed. As Donald Trump re-enters the White House, we're going to look at the monetary as well as the geopolitical impact of his second term and highlights from the African Energy Week conference with renewed calls to drill and invest. Let's start the program with this, and considering Donald Trump's election as US president, there are significant implications for South Africa and the broader African continent. His so-called America First foreign policy approach, characterized by unilateralism and a focus on US interests, may lead to shifts in international relations and trade dynamics. So, I want to explore these developments a little further. I'm joined by Ray Hartley from the Brenthurst Foundation. And Ray, how might Trump's new approach then impact U.S.-Africa relations, particularly with regards to this country?
Yeah, I think it does suggest isolationism, and there's a lot of speculation about his trade policies, particularly towards China. How this affects Africa, however, is not quite as clear, because there may be alternative supply chains in Africa which the U.S. manufacturing sector might, for example, look at to avoid having to deal with China. So it's not quite as clear-cut, although it's not good in a general sense.
But Ray, we do know that from past statements, he doesn't necessarily have a particularly high regard for Africa anyway. We really are going to be shunted to the margin, surely.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple of things there. I think the one is that this is now his legacy term. It might not be quite as aggressively rhetorical as the first term. And the second is that the MAGA, part of the whole MAGA movement's success in this election was that it actually reached out to other constituencies in the U.S., especially black and Hispanic voters. It didn't obviously obtain a majority of those, but it did obtain far more votes from them this time around. So they might reevaluate the approach to Africa with a view to entrenching that dynamic.
Ray, given that the continent has a growing relationship with China, do you think in any way that is going to influence policy towards the continent under this new administration?
I think that there is going to be aggressive competition for influence in Africa. So it actually began under the Biden administration, and I've seen some reporting that this will continue under Trump. So, for example, you know, the critical minerals issue, all the renewable minerals that are mined in southern DRC and in Zambia and so on, and the Americans wanting to build this rail corridor from the, you know, Lobito in Angola through to Lubumbashi in the DRC to enable them to actually have a logistics chain for these critical minerals. And then, you know, so you'll have that. And then on the other side, you've got rail through to Dar es Salaam going to China with these minerals. So there might be, in fact, quite a fierce competition to win some favor with the country. So for the Lobito corridor, you need Angola on board, you need Zambia on board, you need DRC on board, and aggressive kind of dismissive diplomacy and so on is not going to get you very far. So I think that that could really be a good lever for African countries to use to try and get America to take a more open approach towards trade and investment.
So that's the trade and business side of the equation, but let's talk about it diplomatically if we can. You referenced the notion of isolationism. So with the United States potentially withdrawing from some international commitments, do you then see that Africa's alliances could shift on the global map as a result of that?
Yeah, I think that there are countries that are shifting already. And South Africa is one of them. They're fiercely in denial about it. But if you look at the commitment that has been made towards Russia and China, particularly through BRICS, you know, it's quite clear that South Africa sees its identity more closely aligned with Russia and China than with the West. And of course, the case, you know, on Gaza, genocide and so on reinforces that. So I think that might be quite difficult for South Africa because the isolation of isolationist policies directed at China by Trump could make that an uncomfortable relationship.
And let me ask you one final question. What impact, if any, could the new administration's approach to foreign aid have on African countries? And there are many that are reliant on U.S. support.
Yeah, I think going by the first term, I'm not sure that there was any change really. So the biggest kind of health aid, for example, to Africa via PEPFAR was continued by the Trump administration and is likely to continue. I think the biggest trade concession, AGOA, was also continued under the previous Trump administration, and I would say is likely to continue, although they might be slightly more fussy about which countries qualify based on the extent to which they oppose U.S. interests elsewhere.
Ray Hartley, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, the African Energy Week is currently underway at the Cape Town International Convention Centre, and it's an important gathering. It brings together energy leaders, investors and policymakers to discuss the future of the sector. To provide some key insight into the discussions and outcomes of this event, I'm joined now by the Managing Editor of Africa Mining Watch, Andrew Maggs. And firstly then, in broad terms, what, in your opinion, are the major challenges, hurdles, difficulties that are facing the sector right now?
Jeremy, Africa's grappling with a dual challenge. Firstly, providing access to a growing population and concurrently transitioning to sustainable and cleaner sources. And you can appreciate the scale of the first part of the challenge when one considers that 50% of the population of sub-Saharan Africa, that's about 600 million people, do not have access to electricity. And bear in mind, demand for energy in Africa is forecast to increase by 30% by 2040. And in terms of spend, that's in the region of about $25 billion annually until 2030 to meet that demand. And then the second part of the challenge is no less daunting when you look at the ongoing heavy reliance on fossil fuels, particularly among economic heavyweights such as Nigeria and South Africa. On the upside, though, new projects entering the project pipeline are in the main clean energy projects. However, execution is generally slow, owing to the difficulty of accessing finance and, in many cases, regulatory uncertainty.
All right, let's get to clean energy in just a moment. But the Energy and Electricity Minister, Kgosi-Enso Ramakgopa, also addressing delegates earlier in the week. What was his message? Was he bullish?
A few key points from the minister's address. He told delegates that South Africa will use its position as chair of the G20 next year to champion Africa's energy priorities on the global stage. He also took the opportunity to reinforce his message that South Africa will continue to utilize all available resources in its energy mix. And although huge strides have been made in implementing the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Program, fossil fuels, and we're talking about coal here, will continue to be the dominant source for power generation in this country. However, with an aging fleet of coal-fired power plants, it's inevitable that these will be replaced with cleaner options as these assets near life end. The minister also mentioned nuclear as still very much part of the mix. Ramaphosa also stressed the importance of regional cooperation and the need for investment in cross-border energy infrastructure, for example, transmission lines. Furthermore, he urged investment in the beneficiation of critical minerals mined in Africa, such as lithium, for the use in battery energy storage systems. It's also worth mentioning, Jeremy, that with the Upstream Petroleum Development Bill having been signed into law last week, there'll now be greater regulatory clarity and a far more streamlined method to process applications, which will be welcome, no doubt, by exploration companies in this country.
I want to return to clean energy, if I can. Does gas represent, in your opinion, or in the conference's opinion, as the best path to a cleaner future, which is a really important issue?
Jeremy, yes. There's no doubt that Africa's gas-to-power potential is huge and, if realized, will play an important role in this transitioning phase. Sub-Saharan Africa holds enough gas resources to generate 400 gigawatts of power, but only about 20 gigawatts of installed capacity exists. But that number is set to increase significantly with a number of countries bringing large gas-to-power projects into commission. These include Senegal, Mauritania, Nigeria, and Mozambique. As an example, ExxonMobil's Rovuma LNG project in Mozambique should start producing in 2028.
We're talking about the big oil producers. They were obviously in attendance this week. Would have given you an opportunity to learn of their plans to attract investment.
Yes. Given the energy transition is progressing more slowly than anticipated, there's a need for long-term reserves, which is driving exploration. In terms of new exploration investment, we're likely to see more deep water drilling among the major companies, leaving shallower waters to smaller medium companies. We're also likely to see increased activity when it comes to offshore exploration. A point made by one of the officials from the Angolan government delegation is that African countries are not only competing among themselves for new exploration investment, but against countries across the globe. It's a very, very competitive landscape, and those African governments that can offer stability with their fiscal regimes, long-term sustainability, and a predictable regulatory environment will be best placed to attract large multinational oil and gas companies. 2025 will certainly be a busy year with a number of countries launching bidding rounds for new offshore and onshore acreage. In the first quarter of next year, Angola will be offering 9 blocks for exploration in the Benguela and Kwanza basins. This is part of the country's 6-year licensing strategy that kicked off in 2019. In addition, Angola's got 14 blocks on permanent offer. Tanzania's fifth licensing round will offer 24 offshore and onshore blocks, and that's set to open in March next year. While Zanzibar will also have its own bidding round with the award of 8 blocks scheduled for February next year. And in South Africa, we'll wait to see if bidding will take place next year for onshore blocks for shale gas development in the Karoo Basin. And Jeremy, as you well know, this has been a contentious issue among environmentalists, so let's see how that one plays out.
I'm going to leave it there. Andrew Maggs, thank you very much indeed.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
All right, let's move on. And I want to return now to the US election. And the election of Donald Trump has sent ripples through the global economy, with emerging markets like South Africa feeling the impact. The rand experiencing a significant drop yesterday, reflecting, I guess, investor concern over potential shifts in US trade policies and the impact then on global markets. Joining me now is the chief economist at Investec, Annabel Bishop. Annabel, welcome to you. So as I've mentioned, the rand taking a a knock. We did see the Dow overnight surging. How are you viewing the election from a market's perspective?
Hi, Jeremy. Look, I think there is some volatility because of the expectations, I think, in the markets that, you know, it would be a very close call, possibly seeing Kamala Harris come in. And, of course, with Trump coming in, therefore, I don't think markets had fully factored in the impact of his presidency, particularly given many of the policy objectives he mentioned in his electioneering, which obviously include, rolling back some climate objectives, but also, of course, as well, increasing tariffs. And that's obviously likely to be inflationary, and there'll be impacts on growth and interest rates.
Annabelle, apart from South Africa generally, have you been able to discern how emerging markets as a whole are reacting?
I suppose, Jeremy, you know, a lot goes back to his previous presidency when he instituted trade wars, or not essentially trade wars, sorry, when he instituted higher tariffs on countries exporting to America. And of course, the retaliation resulted in the trade wars. And that, of course, saw concerns in global financial markets about economic growth. It did tend to result in weaker outcomes for many emerging market currencies, the Rand, of course, being one as well. And, you know, the risk is we see more of the same, with 10% now touted as a increase in tariffs for all countries, you know, importing into America. And of course, countries like China, some of the emerging markets seeing significantly higher tariffs, I think, you know, in above 50% for China. So of course, you know, that's going to be negative for investor sentiment.
Annabelle, aside from tariffs, are there other risks that you see for South Africa and the region if America First policies are reinstated?
You know, another of the comments made in his pre-election campaign was that re-looking at Africa, re-looking in the short term what Africa can do for America, if you will. And of course, that brings us to the AGOA Pact. Now, the AGOA is really, and it's important to note, it's not a treaty, it's not a bilateral treaty, it's a piece of legislation for the US. And of course, you know, the US can change that, it will. And if they feel that South Africa should not belong to it, or, you know, any other country that's currently in it, that could obviously have a negative impact again for South Africa from a trade perspective, increasing the cost of the goods that get exported from South Africa currently to the US, and therefore, of course, as well, also pushing up the inflationary effect, but more importantly for South Africa, you know, potentially reducing demand.
So this puts pressure then on South Africa's export sector. Again, there could be a domino effect there, because we could see closure or even job losses if this all plays out.
Well, you know, the AGOA effect's probably not going to be that substantial, because it doesn't affect that many exports. But of course, it depends instead rather if he extends these tariffs to other areas. Last time we saw Trump in power, he instituted tariffs on South Africa's steel exports. So it just depends how wide-ranging it actually becomes.
Annabelle, what about the bond market, which has also been affected? How significant are shifts for local investment going forward, do you think? Maybe the first question is, what kind of shifts in the market are we likely to see?
You know, foreign investors have been very keen on buying South African bonds this year, post the formation of the Government of National Unity, and of course, as the United States goes into interest rate cutting cycle. Much will depend, therefore, on how long the US interest rate cut cycle goes on for. Expectations were for it to progress over next year, and of course, be a fairly deep and sharp cut cycle, which could see the Rand strengthen quite significantly. You know, it depends, obviously, on the first 100 days of the Trump presidency, what the policies are going to be, but if we start seeing tariffs instituted quite quickly and inflationary effects come through from that, that has an implication for US monetary policy and inflation, and in turn for the US interest rate cut cycle, you know, both for South African government bonds, but also, of course, in terms of US government bonds as well. They've seen some lift now with the Trump presidency. So again, you know, we will have to wait and see. We do have an FOMC meeting this week, which, you know, tonight should show another 25 basis point cut in the Fed funds rate. But looking forwards, the US economy is strong. We're seeing robust growth. Inflation has fallen quite substantially already. So, you know, even prior to the election, US monetary authorities were communicating a slower US interest rate cut cycle. But again, much is going to depend, you know, on further monetary policy communications for the Rand and, of course, for our long-term borrowing rate.
And Annabelle, what about the upside as far as South Africa is concerned? Are there specific sectors that might stand to benefit in the short term in what is obviously a changing global economic environment?
No, The concerns, obviously, that have come up are the geopolitics, what's happening internationally in terms of Russia, the Middle East. You know, do we start to see a reduction in the tensions there in terms of the conflicts, or instead, do we obviously see an escalation? And, you know, if we do see a moderation, immediate benefits could be a weaker oil price, which obviously would benefit South Africa from an inflation perspective, given that we import our oil and petroleum products in the main. Of course, if we obviously look at the concerns that came out just on the election, the oil price actually jumped a bit. So again, there's going to be concerns, you know, an interest around the policy that come out from a Trump perspective. I think, you know, in the very immediate term, we'll probably see Trump settling in to office. But again, he might, you know, start to talk about these tariffs. I think, you know, for South Africa as a whole, we're a small open economy. And as a consequence, it's very important for us what happens in terms of global economic growth as well. So it's a bit soon, but it depends how quickly and, you know, whether he makes good on his election promises.
So against that backdrop, Annabel, do you think that South Africa's economic strategy needs to change in any way to adapt to these new global dynamics?
I suppose the concerns that America or the US has had with South Africa has not really been on its economic side, but perhaps more on the political side. And in terms of where, you know, the allegiances lie, in other words, the US has voiced concern that perhaps South Africa is not as neutral towards Russia and the Ukraine than it expected it to be. And you'll probably see similar concerns voiced about the Middle East conflict as well. So I think, you know, that's really where the US rather tends to have some contention.
And just finally, you mentioned oil. What sorts of impact is this going to have on bullion?
From the gold price perspective, there's really quite an interesting situation there. Obviously, you know, if you look at the gold price, that does tend to reflect changes in inflation, particularly in the US and globally. And that's really because the gold price is a store of value. Now, we've seen high inflation and we've seen inflation come down quite substantially. So that now, you know, from a US perspective, should really limit the further movement of the gold price in the near term. But of course, as we look longer term, much will depend on whether, you know, US inflation does actually increase, whether we do see this severe protectionism come in or not on the trade front. I think, you know, with the gold price as well, there's also been some speculation in the market, speculative trading, which has also seen it supported as well. But overall, it's really going to remain really a safe haven investment. And if we continue to see good growth in the US and we don't see inflation jump up as much as perhaps has been feared, you know, under a Trump presidency, then we actually could see, you know, some stability there for the gold price. But it really does reflect also as well when we do have an escalation in geopolitical tensions and just, you know, concerns in general.
Annabel Bishop is the chief economist at Investec.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
Violent protests linked to Mozambique's contested election have led to the closure of a key export route, causing millions in losses daily for South Africa's mineral exporters. Now, the route is vital for transporting minerals like coal, chrome, and is now indefinitely closed. And that is leaving exporters grappling with delays and escalating costs. I'm in conversation now with Fidel Owusu, who is an associate at XA Global Trade Advisors. Fidel, welcome. And maybe just start off by giving us your assessment and how you're interpreting the extent of the disruptions at the Lebombo border post and the impact then on exports. It would seem to be a fairly dire situation.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity. Firstly, I would like to say this problem is particularly troubling because of the history of the country and the fact that the country borders some other six African countries. And when I talk about the history, I'm talking about a long civil war post-independence in Mozambique. And so these disruptions is really going to affect the country, a country that recently discovered hydrocarbons in commercial quantities and has internal insurgency in the Cabo Delgado. What is currently happening seems to be another low for Mozambique, sir.
Did this take you by surprise?
Well, if you are looking at the internal dynamics of the country, surprised? No, I'm not surprised. But then after the Cold War, everyone thought that the country has stabilized and therefore was looking forward to more development, more political participation and integration and state presence everywhere in order to bring stability that will lead to substantial development, considering the fact that it is well resourced and has growing population that is having better education with time. But unfortunately, this is happening, and surprise, we are not surprised.
The concern, of course, is for South African mining companies and their ability to fulfill contracts.
Yes. So, if you please, could you repeat that?
So, the delays at the border will inevitably affect South African mining companies, and this will put pressure on their ability, surely, to fulfill contracts. Would you agree with that?
Yes, yes, of course. You know, firstly, South Africa is the largest economy bordering Mozambique. And so Mozambique depends a lot on the South African economy. And the South Africa investors also engage in a lot of activities in Mozambique. But one other thing is that even the ports that handles cargo into Mozambique has been closed because of these disturbances. So in the nutshell, you will say that, well, South Africa is going to be affected, because then when the border is closed, it means security has become the front burner. Now South Africa is looking at how these incendiary activities wouldn't spill over into its territory. And so it shows how that this situation has really escalated in the few weeks.
And it's not only escalating, but if it stays with us for some time, it's inevitably going to impact the prices of commodities like chrome and coal in global markets. So the impact is going to be felt way beyond the region.
Yes, sir. So as I mentioned earlier, Mozambique has a lot of these resources, and any instability in the country is going to have a ripple effect. Investors are going to take note of that and are going to be more cautious about how they put their monies in some of these metals or in companies that deal in this metal. So in the nutshell, I would say that this has a lot of ramifications, and it's negative for global trade and investments.
So one's got to ask the question then, given that these protests are ongoing, do we know of economic and logistical alternatives that exporters might have, if in fact there are any?
Yes, so there is one option, which is to beef up security. Already the authorities in Mozambique are talking about deploying the military. And in fact, when authorities start saying this, it means the police can no more handle the situation. The situation is getting out of hand. So mostly, you get the security prioritizing some of these supply chain routes. And then also private security companies, mostly in South Africa, may be drawn into this particular situation where companies and other firms would like to protect their interests against what they cannot control, because this is mostly dominated by youth. I mean, we are talking about Africa in recent years. African youth are becoming very, very revolutionary, and because of the internal politics of their countries, and Mozambique is one of these. And in fact, this is becoming more macabre and becoming more dangerous for the country. And so I see the security being beefed up and even external private security participating in some of these things, because firms will then need such protection.
And of course, the economic ramifications for South Africa wouldn't be as dire if ports in Durban and Richards Bay were operating more optimally.
Yes, but you know, this is a country, a bordering country, so whatever that affects it really has ramifications on South Africa. Not long ago, South Africa actually committed troops in stabilizing Cabo Delgado, but over time it had to pull them back because there was relative stability. But from my close monitoring of the situation, the investment in Cabo Delgado is still in serious risk. And so I think that whatever that is happening has regional effect, and South Africa cannot be isolated from it.
So let me ask you in conclusion then, is there any advice that you would offer South African exporters regarding supply chain resilience in light of what you've told me?
Yes, so one is the cooperation with the authorities in Maputo, because in as much as we have so much instability and so much unrest going on, you still have a way to prioritize your interest by talking to the authorities in Maputo. And then the South African government must also bring pressure to bear on the authorities in Maputo, because then if you are able to raise a stick as to how your investors should be protected, then at least on the other side of the border, the authorities will be more responsible. So I think that South Africa should not treat the situation with case gloves. It must be very assertive in making sure that its investors are not harmed in any way.
Thank you very much indeed. That's Fidel Owusu, who is an associate at XA Global Trade Advisors. That's also the end of our program for today. Just before I leave you, our online poll, either on LinkedIn or X, and we've spent some time talking about the American election. And my question to you today, Donald Trump and South Africa, is it good, bad, or too soon to say? You can participate in that poll, as I say, either on X or LinkedIn. And that's the program for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We're then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.